WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 remains the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Punch that into your phone. Give us a call. We love to hear from our listeners.
We do indeed.
And coming up later tonight, we're going to be talking about question one without telling you how to vote on it, because we can't do that.
Nope.
We can't even shade the conversation. I can't say half of what I want to say about this thing.
Even if we are allowed to on the radio, neither of us are nurses. So that's what I feel is so interesting about this ballot question is you just have to go around asking your nurse friends, and even they don't agree. We'll get into that.
You know, I want to know how the federal government allows my opinion to be stifled in a nation where we allegedly have a First Amendment and freedom of speech and things like that, but here we go.
It's the fellas at the freaking FCC.
Also, tonight we're going to be talking about, maybe why you shouldn't share your opinion, because Americans are apparently afraid to do that.
Evidently so, based on, we'll get into that later. I found that very interesting. I'm glad that you wanted to talk about that tonight.
I found that study highly suspect. I don't know if you share that opinion with me, Shea Spillane, but I found that study.
I've got a, what's the word I'm looking for? I've got a foot in both courts. Is that the expression?
There were things about
balls
it.
Balls in both courts. Something about a court, and I've got one on each of them.
There were things about it that led me to believe that the people behind it may have an agenda.
Is there some stirring of pots occurring, Derek?
Maybe some slight biases in a certain direction, but we'll get into that in a little bit.
Please pardon my voice, listeners. Fun thing, when you do a radio show and then a comedy show, and then the next day you work a double and your restaurant's busy, so it's super loud, you then get the fringe benefit of having the option of being a phone sex operator, which is where we're at right now with this gravelly goodness.
I think,
a la Frank Sinatra.
I think we, as we learned from your first go around on this show, the listeners actually really appreciate that. So.
I was going to say, I think they actually enjoy my voice when it sounds a little like, hey, listeners.
Yeah, the more Demi Moore you get, the better they seem to like you. So we'll take that in stride.
So I'm just going to overuse my voice all the time from now on, just for you guys. Okay, so for those of you who've been listening to us forever, you know that we mix things up with our first segment. We have combined Did You Hear and the news, because it's so much more fun. And I'm going to start us off with local. I'm going to say threatening letters.
This is the guy who clearly shaved his neck beard for his mugshot. What town is he from? He's from Beverly. He sent letters with white powder in them, because that's the prankster's tool of choice these days, to Trump's kids and some senators. And he's in custody now, but it's okay. He's on medication.
Well, he pleaded guilty today. He's been in custody since March. He pleaded guilty today. He sent it to Donald Trump's homes. The guy's name is Daniel Frisiello.
Yeah.
Frisiello. Come on, Shay. You speak Italian. Frisiello is 25 years old, too, which I found. I'm like, usually this is like a 57-year-old from his basement that does stuff like this. But
I'm glad to see a millennial taking some initiative.
Well, there is one that was addressed as the most recent one to Donald Trump Jr. that was opened in February by his now estranged wife, Vanessa. I love this. She called 911 and was briefly hospitalized after she reported she was coughing and felt nauseous. And then the substances in all of the letters upon investigation turned out to be non-hazardous. He also sent a white powder letter to Eric Trump during the 2016 presidential campaign that said his father must drop out of the race or, quote, the next letter wouldn't be fake.
Ooh.
Yeah. But so he's been in jail since March. Today he was allowed to return to his home under like very certain restrictions.
He's not allowed to have access to stamps or white powder.
I would say literally the main restriction is that he is prohibited from sending anything in the mail.
Yeah, sorry, you're kidding.
But part of the
must keep 50 yards away from stamps at all times.
But so he'll be, I believe he has an ankle monitor, but he'll be allowed to stay in his home until he's sentenced in January. And part of the plea bargain was that he agreed to not appeal his sentence as long as it's such a random number, 7.25 years or less.
If you take a look at his mugshot, it's clear that he doesn't leave the house much.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not really.
This guy's not
wandering. Most people who send anonymous letters, I mean, what's the first thing you think of when you hear of someone sending anonymous letters?
Mental stability.
The Unabomber.
That is not. Yeah, well, yeah.
He may as well be in a cabin in Montana.
Yeah. Everybody thinks they're a big hero now, sending white powder in the mail. Knock it off.
Especially if it turns out to be confectioner sugar.
I think I'm going to get this right. Hazel Correa II.
Hazel Correa. This is local news?
Mm-hmm. This is local news.
I have no idea.
Oh, boy, is this local news. Is this local news.
I have no idea.
Hazel Correa II is the 26-year-old Fall River mayor who was indicted by the feds and arrested for allegedly embezzling $230,000 of money that people invested in his startup company. He was going to start a website. He was going to start an app to pay for travel, designer clothes, casino gambling, a Mercedes, and unspecified adult entertainment.
I mean, don't get me wrong. All of that sounds like an extremely good time,
yeah.
But
Governor Baker has asked him to step down. The members of the Fall River City Council have asked him to step down. Hazel Correa II is having none of that and calls the indictment and the reporting about him fake news to the delight of his supporters who are on Team Hazel for life.
I bet I can figure out another team they're on.
This guy, here we go again. A few years ago, it was Free Willy Lantigua up there in Lawrence, who was, there was so much stuff going on around the guy. He was the one that was trying to be mayor of Lawrence and a Lawrence state representative on Beacon Hill at the same time. And they kind of forced him to give up one of those jobs. And then all of the corruption investigations started turning up. Money is disappearing from the parking garages and winding up in a safe in the mayor's office.
Yeah, but that's where we always keep it.
Town-owned vehicles are turning up, I believe, in the Dominican Republic.
What?
And we're talking about like big dump trucks are like leaving Lawrence and winding up in the Dominican Republic. And this is not an easy thing to move.
I was going to say, like, that's literally, like, that's a job for a barge.
So now we have Hazel Correa II, and it's like, or Correa, or what, and it's like, come on, guy. You know, I do not understand these politicians who get caught, who get indicted, and they're like, I'm going to keep doing my job. No, you're not.
Well, and especially, even beyond that.
I'm going to fight this. It's like, what, okay. So we'll watch the fight until you're found guilty and thrown in jail, and then what?
Well, and even beyond that, I, especially in light of what's happening in this day and age, it always blows my mind when politicians do these super ridiculously corrupt things, which we all know that politicians do. They bend the rules every once in a while for their own benefit. But when they do something so crazy and so obvious, when they live their life under an essential constant microscope.
Yeah.
And expect to get away with it. Not only expect to get away with it, but come back and be like, all right, guys, my B, can I go back to governing you? It's like, no, you can't. Like, they're always so surprised when all of this comes to light. And it's like, hey, remember when it was a huge deal that Bill Clinton, that someone came out during his campaign that he had smoked pot in college, and his big thing was like, I didn't inhale. Like, do you remember that? That was over not inhaling pot in college.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get how they think they're going to get away with this stuff.
So apparently the Fall River City Council had a hearing last night. They apparently either cannot or will not on their own remove the mayor. And it may be, I've heard some buzz about the way that the city charter is written in Fall River. The city council actually cannot remove the mayor. But some residents have started a petition. They've started a recall petition to get rid of the mayor. You, when the governor of the state is telling you to step down, well, you probably ought to step down.
And honestly, at this point, the more that he tries to... He's digging his hole deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper by trying to be like, no, we're cool. We're cool. It's not a big deal. It's like, no, clearly the governor just told you that you shouldn't have this job anymore. Like, bow out gracefully. Fall on your sword. If anything, the only way this guy is going to have a future is if he... I remember my dad taught me that phrase to convince me to apologize to somebody. But fall on your sword. Say, you know what? I screwed up, and I'm very, very sorry.
His app was going to be called Snow Owl, but the way it's spelled is Snool. Snool. Snool is still not... well, apparently it was available to the public at one point in time. It's not now, so he's going to go spend the money on casino gambling and adult entertainment.
Our government's leaders, ladies and gentlemen. In national news, Pennsylvania priest.
Priest?
Mm-hmm. Singular.
I know the bishop stepped down, or the bishop stepped down. Hadn't heard. Is this good news or bad news?
Good news. Well, it's all relative.
God.
But
yeah, there was. So there was
this happened there. This officially happened today.
Okay, I heard rumblings about something yesterday, but I can't put my finger on it.
One of the two former Pennsylvania priests that was indicted in the recent grand jury report as a predator priest has pleaded guilty today to sexually abusing two boys over many years, and often it makes me so sick to my stomach. Often after Sunday Mass. David Poulsen, who was identified in the recent grand jury report as one of the 301 of the priests who engaged in this behavior and preyed on thousands of boys and girls, now faces a maximum of 14 years in prison when he's sentenced. Poulsen sexually assaulted the victims both in the church rectory and also at a remote hunting cabin he owned with a friend in Jefferson County. The cabin was off the electrical grid and 10 miles from the nearest road.
I love how these priests all have rape huts out in the middle of the woods.
Right? And allegedly, Poulsen would often watch horror movies on his laptop with the boys before he assaulted them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because nothing puts you in the mood quite like Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, right? The announcement came... Well, this is what I found very interesting about this story, is it came on the same day that the Pennsylvania legislature started considering or announced that they were considering reforms to the state statute of limitations law, which is the reason why just two of the priests identified in the grand jury report of the 301 have been charged with crimes. Because as it stands now...
You can't do that. That's ex post facto.
Well, no. That's the thing, is that they can't do anything about the things that have already occurred. It's more about...
looking forward.
Yeah, like looking forward to prevent this from happening again. Because it's actually... I was interested to find their statute of limitations involving crimes like this actually doesn't have to do with how much time has passed, but the age of the victim coming forward. So for criminal charges, the victim has to be under 50. And for civil charges, the victim has to be under 30.
Man, that's a long time to wait to have a clear conscience about molesting a kid.
But
I was going to say, if you want to molest a kid, go to Pennsylvania now, but not if you wait until 50.
Well, no. I'm saying the victim has to be under 50.
Right.
Yeah. So like.
Right. So you can. So like, if this, you can remember at 49 and go press criminal charges.
Yes. Exactly.
It'll stick. It's like.
Which I mean, I actually just had a discussion with somebody about this.
It's like 40 years.
I just had a discussion with somebody about this on Facebook, because ever since someone opened the floodgates, people have been trying to attack me. But I've been taking a much more tactful and polite approach to it, which seems to be working.
Just post the NPC meme and
but well, I just like someone said, like, they were talking about the Kavanaugh thing. And they were like, "Why didn't you come? Why didn't you come forward sooner?" And I was like, "Were you raped as a teenager?"
Yeah.
He's like, "No." I was like, "Well, then you don't know like the shame and guilt and anger and sadness and confusion that occurs, or and especially I mean, especially in the Catholic Church, particularly, I will say we're a people of sweeping things under the rug.
Well, you got to keep in mind, too, that the time when a lot of these rapes occurred, because we have stuff going back to the 1940s, actually, you know, prior to, I want to say, 1990, 1995, somewhere in there, the thought of accusing a priest was never going to fly.
Oh, yeah. Like, that would have been the ultimate blasphemy.
You could have walked into, a kid could have walked into a police station and said, the priest molested me. And the cops would be like, hey, good story, kid. Get the heck out of here. Because nobody in that Catholic community would have believed for a second that a priest would do something like that.
Yeah, priests were, I mean, I think about like when, I remember my father talking to me about becoming a funeral director. And I was like, what? I mean, you know, I have a morbid curiosity myself. So like other people find it more creepy than myself. But I was like, what? Like, what made you think to do that? Like, well, what even started that idea in your head? And he said, well, you know, growing up, looking around, I saw the people that were respected in the community. And funeral directors were one of them. Mm. They were maybe just a step below a priest.
Everybody's kind of afraid of them, too.
Yeah. Because it's like, you're the person that's going to decide what it looks like after I die.
Yeah. It's like, you touch dead people. Like, that might be contagious. I'm staying away from you.
But it's up until very, very recently. I agree with you. It was, I mean, you did not dare say a bad word about a priest.
Yeah.
They were like the pinnacle of, like, it's, well, a lot of it's the whole patriarchy thing where it's like, you're supposed to honor your father. They're the ultimate father, other than the one up in the sky we're supposed to be talking to.
In a large number of these cases, not all of them, but in a large number of them, kids told their parents what was going on. The parents went in and confronted the diocese. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, you know, my kid's saying that Father so-and-so touched him inappropriately or is having anal sex with my child or whatever. And the diocese was like, well, we find that hard to believe, but we'll investigate it.
And then nothing.
And then the priest would quietly disappear, mm-hmm. and that would be the end of it. There was one guy that had an underage teenage girl living with him. In his private quarters.
No pun intended.
4 months. While everybody in the parish was complaining about it until they finally convinced him to...
just disappear.
To get her... no, to throw her out.
Well, and that I think is...
this is a priest living with a teenage... and everyone in the parish is like, that doesn't look right.
Yeah, like this is the opposite of the type of person you're supposed to
be. Yeah, you're not... well, you don't get to live with a teenage girl.
Well, that I think, especially in light of... everything that's been happening in the entertainment industry in the past couple of years, I think beyond, I can't believe I was about to say beyond the pedophilia, but really even beyond the fact that they're doing this to children is the disgusting abuse of power that takes place here. Like this, David Poulsen, one of the victims, he would sexually assault him in the rectory and then force him to go to confession with him to confess what had just happened to him as if it was his sin. Like, I grew up very religious, and obviously anyone who listens to us regularly knows I'm big fat not now.
Yeah.
Largely based on things like this occurring in the church I trusted so much. But imagine the level of sociopathy you must have within you to not only do that to a child, but then to use the religious beliefs they have to manipulate them into believing that it's their fault.
But that's precisely why they became priests, because some pedophiles are very clever.
I like that you use the British British pronunciation. That's pedophile.
Yeah, some pedophiles are very clever. And they look at it and
I imagine,
like,
most are very clever, because how else would they ever stand a chance of getting away with it?
Very large numbers of them get busted and get busted pretty quick. But the smart ones...
the smart pedophiles.
The smart ones. It's like serial killers. You know, some people...
well, that's the thing is...
some wannabe serial killers get busted after their first kill. Others go on for years and years. Why? Because they're smart.
Yeah.
And the thing with these pedophiles...
shout out to you, Zodiac.
The thing with these pedophiles is they're like, hang on a second. Everybody in town respects the priest. Nobody in town would ever expect the priest. And you get all the access you want to kids. Sign me up.
Well, it's just like anyone that that has the urge to engage in bad behavior. If they're smart, is going to find a way to get away with it. It's like a heroin addict who doesn't want everyone to know, so they inject between their toes so nobody can see the track marks.
This is the one that drove me nuts back in the 80s. Because, I've had a lot of Catholic friends through the years. What red-blooded male wants to be a priest? I understand that,
my father wanted to be a priest until he decided that he wanted children.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's not just the children, but, the sex is pretty good, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was interested in that aspect of it as well.
And it's like, I understand there was a thing where the Catholic families used to donate a male child to the priesthood, because you had 20 kids, and it's like, we're going to pawn one of these off to be a priest, and usually it was the goofy one. It's the one that can't do anything else. Yeah, you go be a priest.
Knock him into line. Give him something to do.
But it's like, but other than that, who sits there and they're like, my calling is the priesthood and I'm never going to have sex again. Give me a break.
Or in the first place, to be frank.
I mean, I know that there are eight, and by the way, I'm not shaming or disparaging asexual people. I know you're out there. I know there are people who are just like, yeah, it doesn't work for me. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And that's fine. And I'm sure some of them went into the priesthood. But all of the stories that we've heard coming out of the Catholic Church over the years, not just about the kids, but about stuff going on with the nuns and stuff going on in the seminary schools between consenting priests and all the rest of this, a lot of sex happening.
Well, that's what I was going to say is, unfortunately, and this may or may not be true, it's just a correlation that I've seen because obviously I was raised very Catholic and I've thought a lot about this topic. Before, being homosexual was something, I mean, and it's still, there are some families that disown their child for coming out. But we're talking like the 1950s, 1960s. If you were gay, you're not telling anybody about it. You're being taught that you should suppress it as much as possible.
Right.
And what better way to suppress those urges that every person in your life is telling you is wrong than by willingly going into a situation where it's just required, you're celibate. It's just required. And what's unfortunate
but
is
here's
that
the insanity not of it,
all
Shay.
Not all gay priests are pedophiles.
Here's the insanity of it, Shay. Not only are you expected to be celibate, but you are expected to have intimate, trusting relationships with dozens of people that you find attractive.
Yeah.
Whether they are 8-year-old girls or 40-year-old men, you're expected to go be a part of their lives.
Yeah.
And to form very intimate bonds with them. Well, that's going to work out well.
Well, and honestly, it's one of those things where I feel for the priests that went into it in the situation I'm describing, and I cannot reiterate enough, not all priests who are privately gay, or not all gay people in general, let's put it that way, are pedophiles.
Right.
At all.
Plenty of hetero pedophiles wrapped up in this whole Philadelphia thing.
And it drives me nuts that is the connotation so often with so many people who are just completely ignorant. But it really, what bothers me about it is that even though, I think I've talked about on the show before, even though, like I said, I don't go to church anymore, I do toss up the sign of the cross every once in a while involuntarily, but yeah. I'm not a practicing Catholic, but there have been one priest in particular in my life. There have been priests in my life who did it the right way, did what you're describing in having close relationships with their parishioners because that's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
They're supposed to guide them and they're supposed to, Father Peter Quinn, what up? Like Father Peter was a very guiding and helpful influence in my life. Honestly, mostly having nothing to do with being a religious influence. You know what I mean? Like right. Having nothing to do with the just, fact that he was like my priest.
Just like a smart older dude. It was exactly. Listen, just here's what's going down.
Yeah, like I the first time that I ever even considered doing stand-up, which obviously it took 10 years afterwards to do it, but was watching was watching a sermon of Father Peter's where he was talking about he was traveling. He had some priest conference. He was traveling, and the woman who he checked in to get his ticket said, "Oh, you know what? Thank you so much for your service to the religious community, Father. We're going to upgrade you to first class." And he was like, "Huh?" Not realizing he had come from the conference wearing his collar. And he was like, "And I felt so embarrassed, but I gotta tell you, it's the first time my butt has fit into an air release seat." And I remember, and he's saying this in front of 200 parishioners, and I remember being like, that must be a really good feeling, what just happened to him right there. And it's, but things like that, and it makes, what makes me sad, and I'll wrap this up because we have to move on, but what makes me sad is there are some really good, genuine priests out there who really just felt it was their calling.
Yeah.
And now you hear the word priest and it has a negative connotation.
Yep. And it's, and that's a sad reality.
Yeah.
DNA test.
Elizabeth Warren.
That's right.
Yeah, she had... So Trump said in a speech that he would donate $1 million to Elizabeth Warren's charity of her choice if she took a DNA test and proved that she was actually part Native American. And lo and behold, she is.
Well.
But, well, here's the thing. She's like a tiny, she's less Native American than I am.
She,
but that's why you don't run your mouth and not put some stipulation on it. Like, if she's 1/16th or above.
Okay. Now,
like something like that.
I don't disagree with you, but there are two elements to this. Number one, she's got some Native American ancestry somewhere in the last 6 to 10 generations. Okay.
Mine's more recent.
10 generations ago, I don't think her family was even in
America.
America. Because we're talking, that's like 300 years. So it's probably more like 6 generations ago, somewhere in there. But you know what? Pretty much everybody walking around in this country has some Native American heritage.
Yeah, they say that your average person has at least like 1/64th, which is, but that's the thing, is that's why it was such a dumb statement for Donald Trump to make, because it's like, challenge accepted.
Let me get back to him. Here's what Cherokee Nation Secretary of State Chuck Hoskin Jr. had to say about this. Quote, using a DNA test to lay claim to any connection to the Cherokee Nation, which, by the way, she says she's part Cherokee, or any tribal nation, even vaguely, is inappropriate and wrong. Senator Warren is undermining tribal interests with her continued claims of tribal heritage. That is an actual Native American leader saying, Elizabeth Warren, you dum-dum, stop it, knock it off. Another group came out today and demanded that she apologize.
I don't disagree, but what you have to think about is the fact that, so she said that in how this even originated was, it was like, I think one sentence in like a 10-minute speech of hers. That's how this all started years ago.
Well, no, this started because she had contributed to a Native American cookbook. She was listed in a directory of lawyers as a Native American. And depending on who you talk to, may or may not have been accepted at Harvard because of her Native American lineage.
Oh, see that? I knew the first two. I didn't know the last one. I'm saying what brought it to light was her mentioning it in the speech.
Yeah.
The last one is something that bothers me, though, because, I mean, I think affirmative action is awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's retribution and all that. But, like, there was a girl who was a year ahead of me in high school that I tutored in pre-Cal, and she was so dumb. Like, so dumb. But she was 50% Native American. She had a straight C average. She got into UVA.
Yeah.
And I taught her how to do pre-Cal. And Fordham, I still love you, though, but you're no UVA.
So this is a dumb move by Warren.
This is a dumb move by Warren.
The whole way that she did it, because she puts the video up where she's sitting in her office on the phone listening to the DNA counselor. Yes, Elizabeth Warren, you have Native American heritage. And it's. I guess we're all supposed to jump up and clap our hands and be like, yes, it has been proven. Now we may go forth.
Well, but the point that I was trying to get to, which I should preface this by saying, I don't like Elizabeth Warren.
Nobody likes Elizabeth Warren.
I think she's annoying.
I don't know who's voting for Elizabeth Warren.
Annoying girls that I also don't like. Like, I remember a certain person who my ex-boyfriend may or may not have cheated on me with.
Oh. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's not...
She was a huge Elizabeth Warren fan. And I remember Elizabeth Warren making a speech at Tavern, where we go all the time, as our listeners know. And she's sitting there, like, nodding her head, like, very in-depthly. And I'm like, shut up. Like, you are exactly Elizabeth Warren's target audience.
I wouldn't take that girl's advice on how to kick rocks. I mean, that's how, you know...
But that being said, I think two things come into play. I don't disagree that this was a pretty dumb move.
Yeah.
But two things come into play here. One, Trump saying that kind of forced her hand, because it was like, you know what? If he's not going to let this go, fine, I'll get a DNA test. And then if I'm sure in her head, it was like she didn't like announce that she was doing it. She announced after she got the results.
Oh, believe me. Yeah.
If the results hadn't come back, we would never have heard of this. But with that in mind, the second point being that Trump has given her guff forever.
As well he should.
Like, that is maybe perhaps one of the few things that Donald Trump and I agree on, is that
politics.
She's a butthead. But I think it was her finally just being like, oh yeah, you want to do this? Well, look how stupid I'm going to attempt
now,
to make you.
Now, here's the other side of the thing, all right? President Trump's mouth is writing checks that his rear end is apparently unwilling to cash.
That's the number one rule in life. Don't let your mouth write a check that your butt can't cash.
Someone needs to remind our orange president that no one likes a welcher. And right now, he is a million-dollar welcher. We have a million-dollar welcher sitting in the White House. I want him to write a check to Native American charities.
Yeah.
And then let this thing go. Because let me tell you something. If he does, and he's already qualified, and he's been like, well, I'm not going to do it unless I get to test her. and it's like, please, don't give us that image. Just don't.
But I was going to say, that just created a terrible picture in my
brain. But here's the thing. Mr. President, half of this country doesn't like you. Okay, and as far as a third of the country is concerned, that's never going to change. But there's a 17% out there that you might be able to win over. And writing a million-dollar check, which we believe you can afford, we haven't seen your tax returns, so maybe you can't, but we believe you can afford $1 million, writing a million-dollar check to a Native American charity a couple of weeks before the midterm elections.
How is that going to be bad for you?
Would be such a massive boost for the Republican Party that I can't believe you're not writing the check right now.
I can't believe he even denied. Well, that's honestly beyond that he's not writing the check and recognizing the positive political repercussions this could have for both him and the GOP, is that he had the gall and stupidity to try to deny saying that. Dude, it's 2018. People screenshot Snapchats that are supposed to disappear in 30 seconds. Like, there have been crimes solved that way. You really think, even if the video was deleted from your website or something, that there aren't hundreds of thousands of people who have footage of you saying that?
You can't shake a nickel.
You dummy.
You can't shake a nickel out of Donald Trump.
He's such a dummy. It really bothers me. Even
when it would be the best thing in the world for him and his future ambitions, you can't shake a nickel out of Donald Trump. He is Ayn Rand philosophy made human and walking around. Like, it's my money. I earn the money. I'm going to keep all the money.
But the irony
Everybody
is
else
that
is
he
a parasite.
Didn't earn the money.
I get the money.
He was handed the money and he blew most of it. That's why he went bankrupt.
No, he was handed way more money than we knew about. And he actually, look, the guy made some money.
He made some good investments. He blew as much as he made.
A lot of it. Can we talk about Elon Musk and what that guy's doing?
Well,
this is a common thing in industry.
But I was reading something the other day about the history of course, now I can't think of his name, of Warren Buffett. And
that guy only makes money.
That's what I'm saying. Like, don't try to defend Donald Trump when, I'm not saying you are defending, but I'm saying don't try to defend Donald Trump's financial decisions when there are billionaires out there who make the right decision every time,
who actually use their money properly. If we're going to talk about Buffett,
he's a butthead, but he's smart.
If we're going to talk about Warren Buffett, I got to say this, okay?
He made his first investment when he was 14.
Warren Buffett is an investor. Warren Buffett never, ever built anything on his own. Warren Buffett never ran a business.
But he... Maybe Warren exactly Buffett. My point. Do you know? First of all, he did because he sold things when he started his own business when he was 11.
But you know what?
No, but the point, you're actually making my point, because do you know why Warren Buffett never started his own business? Because he knew he was better at investing his money and distributing his wealth than running a business.
Exactly. So we're on the same page with that. There is a world of difference between that. And granted, Warren Buffett has the Midas touch when it comes to picking winners. Yeah, no one is better.
Yeah, he does.
The Warren Buffett seal of approval on your business is the best thing in the world. It means you're doing everything right. There is a world of difference between that and buying a piece of property and building real estate and hoping that you can make a profit off of it, which is what Trump has done.
But the thing is...
Or casinos or airlines, any other stuff that he's gotten into.
But
Trump has taken risks that Warren Buffett has never really taken in his career.
But there are enough other millionaires, billionaires out there who have taken the risk with the proper skill, with the proper research, with the proper everything, and how to be successful. Donald Trump's a dum-dum. Do you want to know why he's so penny-pinching? Because he's lost so much money.
No. At the risk of alienating a portion of the audience, he's Scottish. And the fact that he's Scottish plays an awful lot into...
Hey, I'm part Scottish.
...why Donald Trump is the way he is. Well, you know how the Scots are.
So you're saying he's drunk and not wearing underwear under his...
I'm saying if you give a Scot a nickel, you will never see it ever, 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 ever again. Ever.
My grandfather's going to rise from the grave and slap you for saying that.
And not only, if you give a Scot a nickel, not only will you never see it again, they will turn around and ask you for something for free. But that costs a nickel. I know. Please give that to me for free.
You just alienated so many people.
I've known some...
I kind of want to throw something at you
I've known
now.
Some Scots in my time, is what I'm saying. I'll say mean things about the Australians, too.
Okay, as long as you're saying... That's the thing, is it's just like... I always try to abide by that South Park commercial where they show every character like that is some form of minority that they're offensive to, or some minority culture, anything that they're offensive to, and they just keep showing flashes of all these characters, and they say, please let us know if we've left you out.
Yeah.
Because it's basically like... If you're making fun of everyone, then no one can really get mad about it.
Yep.
Speaking of people that South Park makes fun of, in world news, Canada pot.
Oh, Canada. It's legal.
Mm-hmm.
It's legal.
Yeah, they actually became the largest country today. This happened today.
G'day.
They
G'day marijuana, eh?
The largest country with legal national marijuana.
Beauty.
As at least 111 pot shops selling, very importantly, recreational marijuana.
Beauty.
Open today. And I love that they did it. They literally did a business hours style. So like the first place that recreational marijuana was legal in Canada was Newfoundland because they're the furthest east. But
I'm pretty sure the Newfies were high before this thing.
I read a bunch of articles. My favorite.
See, I just made fun of the Newfies. Now, see, we're working our way through.
Equal opportunity offender. Well, that's what I love. Of the many articles I read about this, because I saw this, and you know the way my brain works, especially when it comes to something I'm so passionate about. I was like, I have to find everything I know about this ever. But I loved one was like, was a testimonial of the first guy to buy recreational pot legally in Canada.
Boy, there's something you want to go down in history for.
Well, and he said his father was talking about how proud he was. And I forget his name.
Okay.
His name was like Thomas Herb Kant or something like that. And his middle his nickname was always THC because that was his initials and everyone thought it was funny. But his father was like, I'm so glad he was able to do this. This has been a long time coming. But he was saying how like the bag of pot that he bought, he isn't even going to smoke. He's going to frame it. He's going to freeze.
Well,
like,
who
he's
frames
gonna,
pot?
He's going to vacuum seal it and frame it.
Yeah, and someday, 10 years from now, when he's really jonesing, that frame gets smashed and that doobie gets rolled.
Hey, my frame $10 bill, that's the first money I ever made doing comedy, is still framed no matter how broke I get. So
Are the Quebecois being their usual Quebecois selves and saying, yes, it's legal, but we're not going to allow you to open any pot shops?
Pretty much. They're also still pretending they don't speak English, even though they do.
Oh, we have wine. We don't need your marijuana.
Well, what I also thought was great is that, like, partially in reaction to this and kind of... this is something that when I worked for Mascan was one of the things that was really important to me that I fought hard for. I sat and wrote letters to congressmen and lobbyists. Yeah, people do that, even though you think they're just crazy people.
Letters?
It's more effective if they have to tear open an envelope.
Did you put some white powder in there to get their attention?
Shut up. But no, Canadian officials, like in coordination with this, announced today that they will pardon every single person that is convicted for possessing up to 30 grams of marijuana, because that's now the legal threshold. So you can't keep someone in jail.
Beauty.
For something that is now, and that is...
Beauty lie.
That is one of my... I used to write letters to prison inmates. That's what made me... write the letters to congressmen. So I was like, if I'm typing stuff up and printing it out, I might as well just do it all that way instead of sending an email.
Just replace the maple leaf with a marijuana leaf and we can go forth.
But yeah, I thought that was because, you know, a lot of times people think of like the legalization movement as like, oh, you're just a pothead who wants to get like smoke pot and not get in trouble for it. And yes, it goes...
In Shay's case.
I mean, shut up. That's entirely untrue. I mean, don't get me wrong. Totally a factor. But not even close to what makes me so passionate about this. And go Canada.
I like the whole aspect of we're going to let loose everybody who's been arrested for low-level possession.
Yeah.
That's a nice touch. We didn't do like, that here.
I would say like 30 grams, that's like a dime bag salesman. You know what I mean? Like that's like a...
That's a lot of weed.
30 grams?
Yeah.
I mean, I probably smoke 30 grams in like 2 months.
Yeah, that's a lot of weed.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that like that, it's a lot of weed relatively to what an average citizen would have. But like if you're a dealer that's selling like eighths and dime bags.
You're letting the dealers walk free. You know.
They're letting the low level dealers. They're not letting traffickers go free.
Botched interrogation.
Botched interrogation. Is this about the, I can't pronounce his name, Turkey and Saudi Arabia?
Jamal Khashoggi? Is that who you're thinking of?
Yes, that is who I'm thinking of. I didn't want to butcher the poor man's name.
That bad choice of words. The Saudis are floating botched interrogation.
Butcher. I'm sorry.
Possible explanation for what happened here. Meanwhile, sources have told Middle Eastern newspapers that they've heard a 7-minute audio recording.
It was apparently from his Apple Watch. That's not true.
No, it was absolutely not from his Apple Watch.
Someone told me that, and I was like, but wouldn't they have like gotten rid of that?
That was reported very widely. And good on you, good sheeple, believing the Apple Watch story. There was a story, Reuters or somebody had it late last week, that they had audio. The Turks actually had audio of what happened, and they couldn't release the audio because it would have given away tradecraft on how they were spying on the Saudis. So somebody concocted this story about he had his Apple Watch running and recording while they butchered and executed him. So apparently they cut his fingers off while he was still alive. And they began doing this in the office of the consul, at which point the consul said, you have to get that out of here or I'll get in trouble. At which point the person removing the fingers said, do you want to still be alive when you go back to Saudi Arabia? The consul has since disappeared he got on a plane and flew back to Saudi Arabia as the Turks have widened their investigation and are now focusing on his office.
Yeah.
So they took him into another office. He screamed in agony for 7 minutes. They injected him with something. They chopped off his head. They believe now his body was dissolved in acid. We don't know what happened to the fingers. The fingers may have been put in diplomatic bags and brought back to Saudi Arabia. Donald Trump would like you to believe that Saudi Arabia is a great ally. And the truth of the matter is Saudi Arabia is our ally. But at a certain point, you are judged by the company you keep.
Yeah.
And I understand from a diplomatic perspective that we have to stand by our ally in this situation. But if any actual evidence, and listen, the Justice Department has these recordings if they exist. There's no question about it. If this went down the way that the Turks are saying it went down, we must have sanctions against Saudi Arabia, and they have to be meaningful sanctions against Saudi Arabia. This is medieval. This is medieval.
And well, and that's always the difficult with diplomatic relations. It's kind of like, say you were stealing this from an episode of Grey's Anatomy, but I think it's a good analogy. Say you were a surgeon and there was a school shooting and the shooter got very badly wounded during the shootout with the police and needed to, you know, have surgery to be kept alive.
Nobody's going to blame you if you walk away, but
at the same time, it is, given the professional side of things, yeah, you're supposed to do the surgery.
America being what it is, you'd probably get crap for that.
Like it, but that's the thing in this situation is, I mean, I thought it was ridiculous aligning ourselves with the Saudis ever.
Pretty much everyone civilized has pulled out of the so-called Davos in the desert investment summit that was supposed to happen in Saudi Arabia, but you need government sanctions.
This behavior, like you said, this is medieval type stuff. Like this is worse than, like, we had a trial and decided he was guilty and decided the best way for him to die was unblindfolded by a shooting squad, a firing squad. Like, this is the most uncivilized possible way they could have handled any problem they had with this.
This is what
man.
You have to do when you sign treaties with barbarians, and this is why you shouldn't sign treaties with barbarians. We talked last year about why Russia was standing with Syria when Syria was clearly using chemical weapons on its own people. And the answer to that is Russia can't back out of the treaty because they can't walk away. Because if you do, everybody else who has a treaty with you is going to be like, well, is our treaty worth anything? And all of your allies are now scrambling. So we're doing what we have to do. We are Saudi Arabia's number one public defender.
Yeah.
And we have to continue doing that. But there has to be real consequences for this. You can't sit by and bad look for Saudi Arabia doing this during a relatively quiet news cycle, too.
Yeah, and, like, I was going to say, that's the thing, is that, like, they are, when normally we kind of just, like, they do their thing, we do our thing, whatever, this was such a bone, the only word that comes to
stupid.
Mind is boneheaded.
I mean, at least when the Russians are poisoning people with polonium, they maintain some distance and plausible deniability. You sent 15 guys into an embassy and chopped the guy up
that has
and left
tons
audio
of
evidence.
That has tons of security cameras, even without the audio evidence. Like, that's the thing, we were talking about this story last week before the audio evidence came out, and it was like, yep, that dude walked in and never walked out, and now they're carrying bags to an unmarked black van.
I couldn't believe the story when I first heard it. The more evidence that comes out.
And of all the places to kill somebody, bring him out into the desert or something. Yeah. There's tons of desert there.
And the reason I couldn't believe it was because I was like, no one would be stupid enough
to do this.
Well,
yeah.
That's a thing that happened.
Oh, my God. Ay, ay, ay. All right, well, in sports news, Astros filming.
Apparently the Astros have been sending an employee who may or may not be an employee. He's apparently works for the owner of the team into the media area during baseball games to shoot video of things and text people.
Yep.
The suspicion is that he's stealing signals, a tradition as old as baseball itself, and really, really not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things.
Well,
we got to move because...
Yeah, well...
Can I briefly make the case for why stealing signals is useless? Imagine that you were a professional batter. You are standing in the batter's box. You are facing down Chris Sale. And you know Chris Sale is going to throw you a curveball. Is that going to make you any more or less likely to hit said curveball? Probably not.
But you have to remember that these are professional baseball players. The stance, the positioning of the bat, the level of the swing that they take, all of that is going to be influenced by what the pitch is going to be. And so the MLB, they were saying they weren't going to comment on it. They finally just came out with a statement, but basically they said it's found nothing amiss with what the Astros have done under the current regulations.
Yeah.
But what is bringing, what this is bringing to light, and what I think we'll see repercussions, like the only repercussions we'll see from this, is their policy on people having camera phones and things like that, and being able to, because essentially this guy was standing right near the bullpen, or standing right near the dugout, or say, like, he was found in all these places where it was like clear that he would be able to record the conversations that people were having. And like you said, that's as old as the game. It's not legally cheating as all the regulations in Major League Baseball are written now, but it's going to make them think about adjusting that.
True.
Because it's just like precedent needs to be set for everything. It's like the girl who was texting her boyfriend and convinced him to get back in the car and commit suicide. That was the first time we ever had a case where someone was charged for texting.
Were they deflating the baseball, Shay? Is that what's going on? They were deflating the baseballs?
I was going to say, that was going to be my main point about this, is that it sounds, as much as Red Sox, you know I love you, but this sounds very Deflategate-y, especially...
No, it's not, because you have a sport where the commissioner of the league does not have a running grudge against one of the teams.
That's fair.
And that's the difference here. I maintain you could put a big flashing sign over the pitcher. And if we're talking about somebody like Roger, you could put a big flashing sign over Roger Clemens that would tell you, fastball, it's going to be the pitch, fastball. And you're still not going to be able to hit it because that pitcher is that good.
I wouldn't say, well, that's the thing, is I'm not saying that automatically all of a sudden you have a huge leg up, but I'm saying that it is a little bit different when, even though you still might not hit the ball, you might not even get a foul, you might not even get a tip. And especially given the fact that even if it says, that's why balls exist, even if it says, oh, he's going to throw a curveball, people screw up curveballs all the time, and it could end up being a ball. There's no guarantee. The ball, so many factors go into it. The wind, if your arm slips, if your hand slips. I care too much about baseball and the mechanics of it. But my point being that it does give you ever so slightly a leg up, knowing what kind of pitch to potentially expect.
If we're talking about...
Especially when you're a professional baseball player who's probably been playing nonstop since he was like 3.
If we're talking about a schmuck like Heath Hembree, yeah, then I think knowing the pitch is going to make a difference. But if we're talking about, you know, somebody who's a really good pitcher, it's still singles all day. They're just going to find a different way to do it.
But well, that's what I'm saying, is that if that's the whole point, is that if it's like one of the best pitchers in the league, it gives you, even who's going to hit who would have hit a no-hitter, it'll turn it into a one or two hitter.
It is WMFO Medford. We'll be back after this.
It's not just at Halloween that the flesh eaters come out. Those who fancy the taste of decomposing corpses are among us all year long. See the blood on their plates, the stench of seared flesh on their bacon sandwiches, the chicken fat on their lips. Escape now! Run screaming from the curse of the meat eaters. Heart attack, cancer, stroke. Save yourself and all those animal lives. Go vegan now. Free recipes at PETA.org.
All right, I've been alone all day.
WMFO Medford. All right, Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
He plays the footballs.
Oh, the balls with the foots?
Yeah, you didn't hear about what happened at the game the other night?
No.
So Tyreek Hill catches a pass, 75-yard touchdown reception in the fourth quarter, and his momentum takes him to the wall at Gillette, and some idiot, unidentified, fortunately for him, because we'd be beating the you-know-what out of him, some 20-year-old from Marshfield threw a beer on the guy. Bunch of other fans flipped him the bird. And this gentleman from Marshfield, who is likely going to face charges, is now also the recipient of a lifetime ban from Gillette Stadium.
Uh-huh.
Good on the Patriots. There's things going on with fans right now that I just can't take it anymore.
I was going to say, this is the second time in as many weeks that I've heard of a fan throwing a beer at one of the players.
Yeah, we don't like it when it happens to our guys. You don't do it to other people's guys.
I was going
to
say, I don't like it when it happens to anyone. These are just dudes doing their jobs.
But, you know, there's a lot of crap going on now. Like, so, somebody from the opposing team hits a home run into the stands, and people throw the ball back onto the field. Like, what the hell is that? What is that crap? Knock it off. I don't want to be in a stadium with these people.
Well, and I always say, especially given the fact, if I learned anything from Johnny Damon, it's that you never know. The guy that hit that home run might very well be on your team next year.
Yeah. If you're going to be...
It doesn't matter if it's a Yankee or Red Sox, a Patriot, a fill in the blank. They're still an incredible athlete that happened to hit that ball to you or throw that ball to you.
If you're
going to
be that dumb and that disrespectful, you don't belong in public. End of story. And you certainly don't belong in public hopped up on booze.
Agreed. In entertainment news, I'm going to say Dennis Hoff. I loved this show, which is why. Nevada.
Is that Hasselhoff?
Nope. Famed brothel owner turned politician.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, Dennis Hoff died in Nevada yesterday. The 72-year-old Hoff was found dead after a political campaign that turned into an after party at the Love Ranch in Crystal, Nevada, which he owned. A Love Ranch employee found Hoff unresponsive and not breathing around 11 a.m., but authorities do not suspect any foul play. He owned several legal brothels in Nevada, including the reason most of us know him, which is the Moonlight Bunny Ranch, which was the setting of the HBO reality show and documentary series about the sex industry called Cat House.
Yeah.
That was one of the most fascinating series I ever watched.
Don't amyl nitrate can kill you, kids, is what I'm going to say. Best pizzeria.
Best pizzeria. Oh, it's not New York.
No, it's not.
No.
Take that. And Yankees suck.
Pizzeria Regina, I believe, was named number one.
According to TripAdvisor's readers.
I was going
to
say it was TripAdvisor.
This isn't even some rando, you know, group of you know, high-minded people sitting around saying, well, we think this is the best. According to reviews that have been posted in the past year, Regina Pizzeria in the North End, you know where it is, not too far from Boston Garden, is the best pizzeria in the United States of America.
God.
We beat
New York again.
We beat Bleecker Street in New York City. Modern A Pizza in New Haven.
Modern A is my favorite pizza place in the country.
You could actually...
Though I've never been to Regina Pizzeria.